are listening to
the Duncan Trussell
Family
Hour
podcast.
This episode of the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast is brought to you by the Pubic Lumberjacks over at Harry's.com. Turn your facial hair into the Amazon basin and do a little clear cutting with a fancy razor that's got a German-engineered blade. Go to Harry's.com and use offer code FAMILYHOUR to get $5 off your first order. Hello, my dear, sweet, beautiful children of the world. It is I, Duncan Trussell, and you are listening to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. I just got back from just a weird trip that started at the Rained Out Tomorrow World Festival in Atlanta. I don't know how many of you guys were out there. I met a few of you, but if you haven't heard, I guess there was an unexpected rain that happened there. The place was a muddy, was the strangest mix of like a refugee camp combined with an incredible music festival. And definitely had a transcendent experience there on a relatively small dose of mushrooms. I trudged through the mud with some friends to go and see Bass Nectar perform. And I've heard his music. I like his music, but I've never heard it live. And some of his devotees had told me, well, you don't even know what it sounds like until you hear it live. And they were right. It was nuts. It was one of the strangest, most hilarious experiences of my life. Because, you know, if you're at a music festival, you're supposed to dress up. So I was in my bishop's outfit. My friend Brendan Walsh was dressed like a cowboy. And we were just standing on this. It was like something out of Apocalypse Now. We're in this muddy, on a muddy hilltop, just deep mud, deep orange Georgia mud, peering down just over countless ravers to wherever the stage was. I don't even know where the stage was. Something about it, I don't know what, but something about it, I think just something about the mixture of these two ridiculous things, which is this muddy, incredibly muddy, slippery mountain hill that we were standing on, mixed in with the super psychedelic music, made me have a 45-minute laughing fit, which I've heard people talk about, you know, taking mushrooms and not being able to stop laughing. But that has never been my experience with mushrooms.
Yeah, man, I just take mushrooms and laugh for about 6 hours, man. Psilocybin.
What the fuck are you talking about, man? When I take mushrooms, it's like some invisible clawed hand has lifted me up and thrown me in the direction of the apocalypse. I'm inevitably attacked by legions of semi-benevolent, mischievous super entities that disassemble and reassemble my body. Sometimes I forget that I'm a human being, vanish into nothingness, and suddenly remember that I'm experiencing a human incarnation. I can see through my hands. Whenever I see a person that I don't know, the darkness inside of them is so vividly apparent that it gives me goosebumps and freaks me the hell out, which makes me afraid to take mushrooms in public because I don't want to be in the presence of, I just pick up other people's vibes and it freaks me out. Sometimes I see some kind of woodland bearded elf-like god creature that hides in the patterns of woodwork and in flowers. And sometimes it just feels like I have been suddenly transported to some kind of alien dimension surrounded by brand new vegetation, brand new constellations. And the whole thing is usually not that pleasant an experience, which is why I very rarely take mushrooms. But I decided to do it at this music festival, and I'm so glad that I did. Because this guy's music, I don't know what it is. He's probably some kind of conduit. He might not know that he's a conduit. That's a possibility. Lots of people don't know they're a conduit, don't want to admit they're a conduit, don't want to deal with that idea. They're afraid it's going to mess up their creative flow. It's too big-headed an idea. They don't want to be Ramtha. Remember Ramtha? My mom used to be into Ramtha. These books would, there's this white book, the Ramtha book, and Ramtha, I don't know how you say it, but I know my mom was into it. Ramtha was a channeled entity from somewhere way back in the distant past, and my mom was really into this stuff for a while. We don't want to be Ramtha these days. You don't want to be a channeler, a conduit. You don't want to sit surrounded by perfume, new-aged folk telling them that you're some kind of disembodied spirit that's temporarily inhabited the meaty body of somebody who's charging money to give incorrect prognostications of their future. That's redundant, but you know what I mean. Nobody wants to be Ramtha. But whether you like it or not, many of you out there are conduits. You just don't know it. You don't want to admit it. You don't want to go crazy. That's one of the first signs that you might be going crazy, isn't it? When you start playing around with the idea that some of the stuff coming out of you isn't coming from you, but is actually coming from some other place. You don't want to admit it. It's scary, isn't it? What a scary idea. There's loony bins filled with people talking about how they've been contacted by aliens, angels, ghosts, gods, demigods, devas, frog creatures, you name it. People on the street, you see them, the people who've been kicked out of mental asylums and are now wandering back and forth, blasting out unintelligible bits of gibberish to anyone who will listen. You don't want to be that person, so you shut yourself off to the idea that there is some possibility that the way that we could communicate with aliens is not through the Arecibo radio telescope or whatever you call that thing, or that massive brand new radio telescope they're building out there in China. The thing is gigantic. It's like the size of 400 football fields, and they say it's going to pick up radio signals from billions of light years away. A lot of people don't want to entertain the concept that our DNA could very well be some kind of receiver mechanism, and that if you open yourself up just a tiny bit to the possibility that you are not a human body with a soul inside of it, but you are a kind of meaty organic receiver which is channeling the thing that you consider to be yourself, which is actually tuning into the thing that you consider to be yourself. And that thing is not an earth thing. That thing is not a universe thing. But that thing is like the finger of some very, very advanced, difficult to understand entity that is dipping into the time-space continuum, just like a little baby poking its finger into the waters of a swimming pool. It's hard to imagine that that's the case, and so it's easier to turn your eyes to the grids, charts, graphs, and numeric systems accessible to anybody who wants to look through the window of logic and rationality and pretend that the universe that they exist in is one that is defined by the metrics created by the human beings that have only existed on this planet for a flickering, twinkling moment in time. And that's totally cool. Who can blame you? You don't want to look out the other windows, and because some of those windows, what you're staring at is legions of hyperdimensional entities, and you know what? Some of those entities aren't necessarily benevolent. So I get it. But if you open yourself up to the possibility that when you're creating music, when you're writing, when you're having a conversation with a friend who is in a rough patch in their life, when you're dreaming, when you're meditating, that you are actually accessing reams and reams of data that exist somewhere, we don't know where, maybe you do, I don't, you're accessing what a lot of people call the mind of God. This is why in the beginning of the ancient stories, ancient authors would write down invocations to the muse. They would say a prayer to the muse. Oh, please come through me, spirit that creates epiphanies. Oh, please come through me, that thing which is the originator of all great ideas. Oh, please possess my life, that spirit which brought into this dimension all of the great works of literature, all of the great inventions, all of the great ideas. Grace me with your presence. Allow me to be a window through which the wind of superintelligence blows. Various prayers like this have been written in the forewords of old books. People don't do it so much anymore because you sound like a goddamn Looney Tunes. But if you open yourself up to the possibility that this can happen, the possibility that the creative process is not one akin to lifting weights, even though it is hard work, but it's not something where you grunt and sweat and bleed, even though you do have to grunt and sweat and bleed in the revision process. But if you open yourself up to the possibility that the creative process is literally you opening yourself up like a window to some alternate dimension that has yet to make true contact with this universe, you might be surprised not only with what comes out of you, but you might be surprised with the events that transpire in your life following that very simple, bizarre decision. It's the decision of the lunatic. It's the decision to throw yourself off the precipice of rationality and allow yourself to go spiraling down into the universe of the maniac, lunatic, mystic, madman, and schizophrenic, and it's a scary decision to make. But some people do it, and those that do it, they create the societal equivalent of the Tunguska incident. You guys are aware of that, I don't know, but I think it was in Siberia. Some people say it was a meteor impact or a meteor zoomed over, but there was some event that happened that blasted all these trees down, just wrecked acres and acres and acres of forest. And that very same thing happens in the reverse when a person writes a great work of literature. When somebody like William Shakespeare comes along, when somebody like Stephen King comes along, when some incredible singer comes along, when some incredibly inspired artist has the guts to let whatever is on the other side of the window of their being come shining through into the dimension that they're currently inhabiting. That is when you get the opposite of these shootings and bombings and insane acts of violence that happen from time to time in the world that we're living in. The opposite of a mass shooting, as far as I'm concerned, the opposite of a mass act of violence is a mass act of love. And a mass act of love happens when you allow the hyper-compressed information UFO hidden in the glaciated regions of your internal being, that thing which has been encased inside a thick membrane of fear and self-doubt, to come exploding into this dimension in the form of whatever art or creative endeavor or social action you have been inspired to take. And because there are some of us out there who have had the guts, the skill, and the discipline to do it, we now have so many great books, so many great songs, so much great music, and so many incredible human beings who have vastly changed the societal landscape that they were born into. From, you name it, from God, Pink Floyd to Martin Luther King. This spectrum of creativity, when it comes into this universe, it has the effect of not randomly decimating lives, but it has the effect of intentionally and in the most beautiful and unpredictable way to reorganize the human experience into an experience filled with love, inspiration, hope, and joy. So, the way I see it you got to open yourself up to the possibility that you're something that can be opened up. Just do it. Allow yourself that one tiny little dalliance into the possibility that there is hidden inside of you some great thing that wants to come into this dimension. Something is in you. It's like those Mexican jumping beans you buy at the airport, you know? There's not, those beans aren't jumping. There's worms in the damn things. I actually made the mistake of breaking open one of those Mexican jumping beans and moths got all over my house. Well, you might be a Mexican jumping bean, only instead of some annoying moth worm which gets into your pantries, there might be inside of you some idea that actually saves someone's life, that actually saves a lot of people's lives. Because there's a lot of people, I guarantee it, who, rather than putting the gun in their mouth and squeezing their trigger, decided not to do it because of some song, because of some conversation they had with someone, because of some tiny act of love, or because they tuned in to some great act of love. And all works of art are acts of love. So, my sweet children of the earth, if you've managed to let yourself freeze down, if you've managed to let yourself become glaciated with fear, if you've managed to allow yourself to be covered with a terrible callus consisting of a combination of your insecurities mixed in with some kind of lazy connection to a worldview where there isn't the possibility for miracles to happen, I invite you to spend this next week invoking the gods and entertaining the concept that you're about to be thawed out. Just do it. We all get frozen. To quote Sharon Salzberg, the healing is in the return. It's okay to get disconnected for a little bit, but from time to time, you need to throw on a bishop's outfit and go slogging out into the mud and listen to some incredible music. You don't know what could happen. So there you go. My God, I'll say it and I'll admit it. Life changed by DJ. Forgive me, universe. I know by saying that in a lot of your eyes, I have perhaps fallen, as far as being cool goes, so far underneath what cool actually is that many of you may have ripped your bloody earbuds out of your ears and thrown them to the ground. But it can happen. Art is art, friends. Doesn't matter where it's coming from. Books, music, DJs. Art is art, and art is love, and love is the sun that grows epiphanies out of the soil of the human biosphere. So find some nice love shine that you can lay under this week and see what happens. Who knows? You don't have to take mushrooms and go see some DJ in the middle of a muddy hell pit. P.S. You can just download a great audiobook, listen to To Kill a Mockingbird, or check out some amazing graphic novel, like anything by Grant Morrison, or just find some great work of art. It's the same thing as buying a space heater, only it's not radiating heat, it's radiating love. And that love is the incubator that's going to make wonderful ideas explode out of you like an ancient UFO blasting out of a glacier. Oh, man. I love you guys. And this is a really good podcast with my friend Derek Waters, who is the creator of Drunk History. We're going to jump right into it. But first, some quick business. Here's a quick message from the Bone Zone Boys.
Russell, how's it going, everybody? I just want to give you a heads up that my favorite podcast, The Bone Zone, starring Brendan Walsh and Randy Lidke, is going to be at the Holy House in Boston, Massachusetts this Saturday at October 10th, 6 p.m., early show, so they can do a party afterwards. Get your tickets on brownpapertickets.com. Just search for Bone Zone. My favorite podcaster, Brendan Walsh, he has his partner, Randy Lidke. Not so funny, but he's easy on the eyes, so you can come see them do their podcast, watch Brendan be really funny, watch Randy kind of be, you know, kind of stupid and slightly overweight.
What
he's
the
not
fuck,
the brightest.
Dude? Fuck you. You said you were going to... No, let's just redo it.
Hey, man.
I'm fine with you doing a... You said you were going to promote us.
I'm promoting it.
You
and
said,
I'm tricking... See, Duncan's going to play it on his podcast.
I get it.
I'm acting like I'm Duncan.
No, I know. I'm the one. I just hit record. I'm fine with that, but why are you attacking me?
I'm not attacking you. I'm just doing a Duncan impression because like his...
Is that what Duncan says about me?
That's what a lot of people say about you.
Well, either way, that's very rude of you.
Listen, dude.
My biggest worry is that people are going to believe that's really you, and then they're going to think that I'm stupid and fat.
They're going to believe that I'm Duncan.
Yes.
Well, Duncan's... Here's number one.
Number one.
Duncan's listeners are so high out of their minds.
That's my problem, is Duncan's listeners are so fucking stupid that they believe everything he says no matter what.
Yeah.
So if you tell them that I'm stupid, they'll believe that.
Well, but they'll also come to our live podcast.
And they'll
October
throw
10th.
Fucking beer cans at
no,
me.
No, they won't.
Because they'll be like, Duncan said you're stupid.
They'll be on acid.
Duncan said you're stupid.
Hey, man, now this is really Duncan. And that's Randy Lidke, half of the Bone Zone podcast. They're going to be at the Hooli House October 10th, 6 p.m. show. Party afterwards. Randy's got a half hour Comedy Central that's premiering special that night. And so go to brownpapertickets.com, search for Bone Zone, get tickets. They're only $15. And now listen to my podcast, man. Smoke some weed, drop some acid, do some shrooms. I got some trippy stuff I'm going to talk about, man. It's going to trip you out, get real funky.
Go see the live Bone Zone. I love those guys. They're super funny. And even though Brendan Walsh's impression of me is a terrible impression, I'm sure I don't sound like that at all. I still think he's one of the funniest humans on earth. And I hope you guys will go see the live show. And I hope that I hope one of his teeth falls out on stage. Listen, friends, it's not my fault that you incarnated in a dimension where protein strands erupt from parts of your body where you don't want protein strands to erupt from. You gotta shave your crotch, guys, gals, everybody. Soon we're gonna get a Class V solar flare that's gonna make everybody's hair fall out, and we'll all be hairless, shiny things slithering around the surface of the world like sexual worms. But until that point, you gotta take care of that job yourself. And if you're hacking down all that disgusting pubic hair from your face and crotch and asshole using some awful blade that you bought at one of these chain stores, then you are committing a sin against your body, and more than likely a Kandarian demon will drag your soul into hell one night when you're sleeping with your angry red face all cut and scarred and fucked up from that cheap shit razor you bought, the one that was hidden behind 17 inches of plexiglass that an angry manager had to unlock using a set of ancient dungeon keys. You don't want to live in that world, do you, friends? Hell no. And we all love getting presents from time to time. Why not give yourself a present, which is a Harry's razor? These are German engineer blades, and if you go to harrys.com and use offer code FAMILYHOUR, you'll get $5 off your first order, which means that every month, or depending on what subscription you sign up for, you're going to get a nice, sweet box of glorious, old-school, barbershop-style Jesus blades. There is definitely a difference in the way blade shaves. I know that it sounds like just another blast of corporate diarrhea erupting out of the mouth of some bought and sold shill, but I'll tell you this, friends, I don't promote anything on this podcast that I haven't used, and Harry's sent me one of their fantastic razors, and I used it, and I felt like I was sitting back in some barber shop, like a barber shop in a Truman Capote novel, where somewhere nearby a family was getting shotgunned to death while I was getting a glorious, sweet, soft shave. You'll never forget the way it feels after you've shaved your face with one of these amazing blades and touch your sweet skin soft as a freshly shorn unicorn dancing in the moonlight. Go to Harry's.com and use offer code FAMILYHOUR. You know me, I rarely get on TV. I've got a badger face, my teeth are weird, and I sound like a raspy lesbian chain-smoking trucker. So there's not much of a market for it out there. But the one time that I did end up on TV, on the Pete Holmes show, guess what blade I used? Harry's. That's right. I shaved my face using a Harry's blade before I got in front of the sacred television camera and basked momentarily in the glory of those showbiz lights. You can look at my face. It's shaved with a Harry's blade. That's right. And I'll tell you this much. If Jesus were around today and he felt like getting rid of that hippie beard, he'd use a Harry's blade too. So go to Harry's.com. Use offer code FAMILYHOUR. You'll get $5 off a beautiful German engineered blade. Hare Krishna. We're also sponsored by Amazon.com. We've got an Amazon portal located at DuncanTrussell.com. And if somehow you're a deaf, blind, mute, cave-dwelling being who just emerged from whatever subterranean lair you've been suckling on bats inside of, you probably have heard of Amazon. They've got everything you need there, including Audible books. I'm currently listening, if you can't tell by the last commercial, to In Cold Blood by Truman Capote on Audible. And you can get that by going to Amazon.com. And here's a double whammy. You can get a free copy of that by going to audibletrial.com/FAMILYHOUR and signing up for a trial membership to Audible. Either way, please, if you want to support this podcast, one of the great ways for you to do it is anytime you're going to Amazon to shop for anything, remember to go through our portal located in the comments section at DuncanTrussell.com. Pick up a copy of Truman Capote's In Cold Blood, or if you really want to melt your brain and make your pineal gland swell up like the clitoris of a satanic witch getting filleted by a tribe of demons, then head over to Amazon.com and pick up a copy of Grant Morrison's The Invisibles. This is a graphic novel. Let me tell you guys, this fella, Grant Morrison, is wrecking my brain with his genius articulation of chaos magic, the fourth dimension, and just about anything bizarre, weird, or supernatural. It's like reading some kind of ancient grimoire that's been converted into a comic book. Go to Amazon and get that, but go through our portal and bookmark it, won't you? Finally, we've got a bunch of, not finally, there's a few other things. We got a bunch of t-shirts, posters at the website. You can find those by going to DuncanTrussell.com. And if you want to see me do stand-up live, I'm going to be at the Laughing Skull in Atlanta next week. That is October 15th through the 18th. Come on down and see a show. I'm also going to be in Australia November 5th. So if you're out there, pick up some tickets. They are going fast. I think the show in Sydney is already sold out, but there's tickets for shows in New Zealand and Australia, and all of those links are located at DuncanTrussell.com. All right, friends, today's guest on the Duncan Trussell Family Hour has been on a few times. He is the creator of the hit show Drunk History, where severely inebriated human beings like yours truly try to recount historical stories. He's one of the most beautiful, sweet people that I know, and it's always a pleasure chatting with him. Definitely check out Drunk History, which is now, the new season is running on Comedy Central, and I think my episode is coming up sometime this month. Check my Twitter feed for that. But for now, everybody, please welcome to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast, Derek Waters.
Duncan Trussell Family Hour.
Derek Waters, welcome back. Holy fucking shit, man! You're experiencing an incredible existence right now. You, how many seasons has Drunk History been running for?
Three.
3 seasons. Mm. It's amazing to think about that, isn't it? Like, do you, are you, you're just used to it now.
This no, is just I'm your not job. Used to it. No. After this season, I've done over 100 stories of with narrators, with the internet including, you know. It blows my mind because I just wanted to do it once.
Right.
I didn't want to do it 100 times.
But you're working nonstop. Anytime I call you, you're editing. You're when do you get a break?
I haven't. This show, we're right now we're recording September what? What are we on? 12th?
13th? This is the 13th.
Yeah. And we started September 1st of last year. So, and we'll go until October. So it's a 13-month job. So it's a lot, but I love it.
And those are long days.
Those are long days, and some days we film 2 narrators. Some days I'm on the road for the whole day, and I'm excited and hopes of a possibility of another season to not do as many stories next year and, you know, figure out ways where I can actually work and live.
'Cause right.
This year, I mean, I've been here for 15 years, so working for 13 months of the year is a blessing. So I don't want to like deny that. I'm not complaining, but it is something that I do feel like I'm missing out on, like accepting it all and living.
'Cause you're doing like 12-hour days too. Mm-hmm. That's not normal. That's not a normal job. It's the most intense, dramatic. I don't know how many people realize that with producing stuff for TV, the only thing that I can think to compare it to, and it's not a fair comparison, obviously, because war is a million times more horrible, but it's somehow on the spectrum of war in the sense that you're dealing with endless calamities. There's always something is going wrong in the most extreme way, and you're always having to make like decisions on the move that can impact whether or not the thing you're creating, which costs hundreds of thousands of dollars, is going to look like shit or not.
Yeah. I mean, it's the blessing of the curse of the blessing and the curse of being in control and being able to have final say is like something I've dreamt of, and also something that hasn't allowed me to dream anymore because I can't sleep, you know, but
right.
I love it. I love it. I mean, the thing is, if I was doing like a sitcom right now that I didn't think was going to go further than a pilot, I probably wouldn't be alive. But this thing I love, I've always loved it. There's a thing that I loved, and I don't mean this against the show, but when you're a comedy snob, and I don't want to speak for you, but I feel like both of us are, and it's not like snob in a negative way. It's comedy opinionated, you know?
Yeah.
And I look at it as like, what did I always find funny about this? And it was, I love seeing people passionate that are frustrated, and no matter what they have to do, they're going to let you know how they feel. Like, that doesn't scream comedy, but that screams like charisma and passion that I've always admired in any story or documentary where I want someone to achieve something. So I always just go back to like, why did I want to do this in the first place? And now it's more about that, along with holy shit, I've opened up this world of history stories that like I could find something that I could tell people that I have the attention of these people that I know I wouldn't have had the attention of, you know, 3 years ago, and now saying like, hey, did you know this happened? You know, and telling it in a way that isn't preachy. It just, I think that's what makes me excited, is telling stories that I think we all should know.
As somebody who, by now, you've got some form of a degree in history. You must have by now, even though the history lessons you're getting are coming from severely inebriated people, prior to the stories that they're telling, you are getting the actual real history, right? They're telling mm-hmm. you, here's like the, you have to know like the facts behind it. how would you sum up where we are in human history right now compared to all the stories you've heard about where we've been?
Oh, man, I don't know. I mean, I guess I feel like, you know, history repeats itself in the way of you constantly, the loser never gets a say in how they lost and what they were fighting for. I don't know how far we've come from these stories that I gravitate towards. I think there still is a thing that, and it's not disrespect to people that write stories. It's just, how do the losers have a voice? I don't know how far we've come. I don't. But I do know that, like, now I think more people, and this is the blessing and the curse of the world that we live in now of 2015, is that we all have a voice that's always been apparent, but it's not been as easy to access. And it's the curse that everyone can say how they feel, because some people don't know how they feel and they just want to splurt out bullshit. But I think it's the best time in history where people can say how they feel and people can hear it. Is that making sense?
Yeah, totally. I don't know. What is that? What do you think that looks like 10 years from now, 20 years from now? What's the impact of...
It'll be a joke. I don't know what it's going to be like. But, I mean, you and I both know that this time that we're living in is a joke. It is. I mean, we're allowing any human being to have access to any other human being. And there's a very cool thing about that. But it does worry me, and I think...
How does it worry you?
Not everyone has a good head on their shoulders. Not everyone has something nice to say. Not everyone is all there and needs, you know, nurturing and not like... I don't know. I don't know. It just...
Did I tell you... When I was at Singularity University, I did this podcast at Singularity University.
There is a university called Singularity.
Absolutely, yeah.
I love it.
Well, there has to be, because they're studying this. They're studying what's happening, and which is that we're experiencing this incredible acceleration in human progress.
Mm-hmm.
And people want to know, everybody wants to understand it. People in the military have to understand it. People in corporations have to understand it. Everybody has to understand what it means that every few months we're experiencing 10, 20, 30 years of human progress. Like, yeah. What does that mean? How is that going to affect us? But the really spooky thing that has stuck with me that Aaron Frank said to me is that 50 years from now, 100 years from now, it's going to be like everyone on planet Earth has access to a button they can press that will destroy planet Earth. Because right now, you know, we have this technology that most of us have taken for granted by now.
Mm-hmm.
But it makes the printing press look like something that fell out of a gumball machine.
Yeah.
It's free, instantaneous access to the entire planet, and it's whether to output or to input. We can input almost all written works by now. We can input almost all scientific texts. We can input so many different clusters of data, or we can output whatever data it is that we want, and we can do it for almost nothing, for essentially for free. Never has there been a time in human history where that's possible, but he said that you have to see like where 3D printing technology is going and what happens when 3D printing technology meets DNA, like being able to print out like chromosomes or being able to print out like, you know, viruses or being able to print out DNA or being able to print out whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this technology is going to, or the really scary one is that Right now it costs an awful lot of money and you have to have some pretty high-tech shit to get a satellite up into orbit, right? Mm-hmm. But that technology is going to become increasingly accessible to people. So, you know, Frank and his family can go get the Frank Thompson family album in a satellite and shoot it into space if they wanted to.
Wow.
That's coming down the tube. So, the point being...
Do you think we're eventually just going to be born into heaven? That Earth just won't exist? I feel like everything I learn about the future is closer to what we all believe heaven is.
Well, what's your definition of heaven?
Heaven is eternal peace. There's nothing about trying to be anything. Well, I guess I've never thought about it till right now, but I feel like on Earth compared to heaven is like, there's like a test of like, who are you? What do you want to be? Who are you trying to be? What are you trying to say? And to me, I believe heaven is a place where you just know, and Earth is where you figure it out.
So this is what you're talking about is the, this actually fits really well into the concept that this is a simulation that we're in right now.
Mm-hmm.
That's a training program that we're in some kind of...
100%. I mean, I don't know your speech, but I'm with you that this is just training. You know, I don't believe in rules, but I do believe in treating, having good intentions. Doesn't mean your intentions are always going to go well, but I do believe in if you treat people the best that you can, that is the true test to... In my hope of heaven is no judgment and just trying to treat people the best you can.
And it's harmony, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's harmony. It's one thing that's for certain is that it is possible to be completely out of harmony,
mm-hmm.
completely out of balance, and completely out of sync with your environment. Like, mm-hmm. there's no question about it. Like, anyone living today has to admit the fact that if you're living in a place where, for example, it's very cold and you don't wear warm clothes or have some kind of heating mechanism, you're going to die and mm-hmm. you're going to be incredibly uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. So you're not in harmony with your environment. And if you're living in a place that's super hot, obviously, if you're wearing like too many clothes, or if you're in a place that doesn't have air conditioning or doesn't have openings, you're gonna die because you're gonna overheat. So we know that there's something called harmony. So I think heaven must be tuning in to the frequency that is the universe. That yeah. whatever that is, it's fully being balanced. It's like that great. Bruce Lee's speech when he says, be like water. You know, like water takes the form of whatever it goes into. If a cup, it takes the form of a cup. Wherever it is, it immediately harmonizes with what it's in. It's
That's
perfect.
Great. Yeah.
So it's like that to me is heaven. And then disharmony, the less harmony that you have with your environment, the more you're in hell. Right. It's safe to say, right? Like if you're completely out of tune with what's going on in your life, those are the most miserable days, whether it's your clothes are wrong or whether it's your not admitting the situation that you're in. And
yeah,
you're
just denying reality, yeah. And I do believe that there's a way of, you know, I don't want anyone to suffer, but I do believe that there are certain things in life that happen and people that are around us that want bad, and I don't understand that, and I feel like
they want bad.
They want people
they
to
want
fail.
To hurt. They want people around them to fail.
Yeah, because for some reason they had misfortune happen to them.
Have you ever wanted people to fail?
Never. I've never wanted anybody to fail, and I'm not saying that because we're being recorded. I'm saying that because it's true. Because
you've never had an enemy.
Oh, of course. But
you never wanted your enemy to fail?
No, I want my enemy to learn, if anything, but I wouldn't be to die or to go lower than... I'm at 36, like, I think about my worst enemy, probably like the girl I lost my virginity to and the guy she cheated on me with. That's probably still like the evil to me, but I don't want that guy to die.
But you wouldn't, it wouldn't bother you if like...
I know it would. He's a human being. We make choices, whether we know the right or wrong.
Remember that story I told you about the time I was dating that girl at community college and she had this boyfriend who would glare at me all the time?
Yeah.
And he was a bully. And he got stabbed to death at a party. And she made me go to his funeral. And, man, I would love to say that I had some kind of Christ-like compassion. I think the reason that I gravitate towards people like Ram Dass and spirituality is because without it, I would be the most monstrous shit on earth. Because
you wanted that guy to die.
I didn't want him to die, but I'm not going to say that when... Because, like, this was community college. I didn't want him to die.
Right.
I don't think I ever thought, I hope that guy died.
You still wouldn't cry for him.
I would go to this I was going to this community college.
Would you cry for him?
Not even now. When I was going to the...
If you met his mom.
I passed his dad, his weeping father.
But his mom.
I never met his mom. I mean, his mom wasn't there.
I'm just saying, like, now.
Cold. No, man. See, this is the thing, man. This is why
I'm not testing you. It's just a good, like...
I think that if I sat down with his mother and, like, talked to her... It's... The thing about it is, I didn't know the guy very well.
Sure.
All I experienced...
You knew was one thing.
All I experienced of him was his, like, I would go to school and this menacing redneck would, like, give me the darkest stink eye of all time.
Was it Dave or David Duke? I forget his name.
It was like that, though. And then, like, you know, I remember my girlfriend saying, you know, Shane was at a party... And he got stabbed to death by this kid he'd bullied for his whole life.
Yeah.
And it wasn't as, like, Ram Dass, you know, the people I'm into, they tell stories of compassion. Like, Ram Dass talks about how on his puja table, which is what you sit in front of when you meditate, he's got a picture of George W. Bush that he put there. And every morning when he would go to meditate, he would sit and he's got like pictures of like Mother Teresa, Neem Karoli Baba, Gandhi, Nelson Mandela, you know, all these beautiful people. And he would look at each of them, you know, as to harmonize with their energy. And then he'd get to George W. Bush and be like, hello, George. And then like, you know, the way he would find compassion is like, think of the heavy karma that someone like George W. Bush has. You know, this is a man who like... has killed hundreds of thousands of people. He's the depth, the darkness that man is in is so intense. That's where you find compassion. But anyway, this is why I like people like Ram Dass are my rock stars, because as someone who like isn't at that place, sometimes when things like that happen to my enemies, instead of feeling an outrushing of empathetic, sweet, compassionate love, there's just a feeling of like, well, I guess that's how the universe deals with people sometimes.
Right.
Which sucks. I would love to be the other way. I would love to, like, when my girlfriend called and said Shane has been stabbed to death by his bully, to have wept or to have been like, oh, God, that's so awful. That poor bastard. He was so confused and lost in this life. Oh, but it wasn't like that. It was just like one less redneck to glare at me at fucking community college.
I get that. I get that.
I don't want to be like that. I recognize fully the absolute wrong in that level of numbness. Like, right. I know that it's that's the root of all problems, but that's just where I'm at.
And that's okay. I think if I can be anything to this, is that realizing that none of us have made all the right choices, you know? I think choices are different from heart, you know, of like, when I meet someone new, male or female, I always think like, oh, I get their vibe. But my goal is always to figure out what their intentions are and to figure out someone's intentions. And I feel like if someone's intentions are good, and who are you and I? You know, we're not like God, we're not like judges, but we can get a good test of like figuring out what somebody wants, if they want a credit or they want peace, you know. I don't know what I'm trying to get at, except that when you do bad, you know you're doing bad.
Yes.
And you should always avoid from people that want to do bad. Does that mean they're bad? No, but it means that you should avoid anyone that wants to do bad.
Right. Well, yeah, I know. You're right.
But, I mean, this is probably like 13 minutes ago conversation, but in heaven, the thought of heaven, I always have had this thought of like, man, wouldn't it be cool when you die that you go to this movie theater and everyone that has passed before you is there. And they introduce you and they say, well, now we're going to show you the reason and all the things that happened to get you where you were. And you see the good, you see the bad, you see all the things that molded you of who you are.
Right.
And that's the thing that I always try to think about when something bad happens to me. I say it's part of that story. It's got to be. You can't be like, well, that wasn't right. That wasn't supposed to happen.
Right.
No, you can't go there because it did happen.
Right.
And you have to go. And that's not like trying to be like, oh, everything's great over here. I'm great. And everything's, but in reality, things are bad. No, you have to deal with the things that have happened to you and accept them of like, that happened. And we're all molded to be this one thing. And it doesn't always mold to the thing that we dreamt of being.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that it's the wrong thing to be. It's to mold you to be you.
That's it.
We got to be you.
That's it. You got to harmony. What do you need for a harmony, Derek? What do you need? You need more than one person, right? Unless
you can't just do that.
You can't
just
do that.
You gotta have another sound.
You need another sound, right?
Yeah.
So here's the deal. There's a sum total of all phenomena that's happening in every given moment. Like right now, crest of the wave of phenomena. We're in this specific location. It's all happening right now, and you can either harmonize with what's happening right now, which is wherever you happen to be, whatever part of the world you happen to be in, with whatever your life situations happen to be, you can either harmonize with them or you can resist. Yeah. You can resist. One of them is going to create this incredibly beautiful sound, and the other one is going to create dissonance. It's one or the other. You get to pick. If you want to create dissonance, you can. And it totally makes sense. For a lot of people, that totally makes sense. These are the complainers. These are the people who, whatever happens, they're like, ah, my fucking life fucking sucks. Here we go again. This fucking bullshit happened. Or you're one of those badasses on the YouTube videos, which is why everyone loves to watch these nature documentaries or where, like, the wildling is out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
And when you see someone, these survivalists, the most recent viral internet thing is some guy in the middle of nowhere creates a hut that has a tile roof. And he shows how to do it. He's just taking mud out of the ground. He builds a kiln inside the ground. He starts his own fire with kindling. He like bakes the mud to create the tiles. He does it in this perfectly organized way. At the end of the thing, he's got a fucking tiled house that he's fabricated out of just what's around him. That's harmonization.
Mm-hmm.
He took what for me would be death. Right. Like if someone's like, hey, I'm going to drop you in this muddy, shitty forest. Good luck. Mm-hmm. Death. I would die. I would react to it in the wrong way. I would not harmonize with it. And I would die. The end result of not harmonizing with the universe is death. Mm-hmm. This guy, he sings a fucking barbershop quartet with nature. And the end result is he creates this beautiful habitat where he could like survive for probably indefinitely.
But I think a good thing to remember, and that's a great story, is that this human being has brought light to a certain subject that has like been a little dark in your world.
Yeah.
To say like, that's great, but let's also remember that this guy has demons too that we aren't aware of.
Right.
That when we hear great stories about this, that we also remember that doesn't make him better than you or I.
Because he can build a clay hut.
Exactly. This is a great thing that appealed to you. But you have told many things that appeal to many people. But there's also things that you're working on. That I just am always conscious of, like, hearing stories, great achievements from people to... And I always feel like, oh, what the fuck have I done? It's not about what the fuck he's done compared to you've
right.
done. It's about finding things that you can give to the world.
Mm.
But there's no human being that I've met that's like, got it figured out.
No.
Nobody.
No, I think it just gives you a nice...
But I just want to help in that way that... When I hear a story like that, I picture this perfect person. But I have to remember that, like, he probably throws up avocados every night.
Yeah, he's a fucking ass.
And I'm not saying he's an asshole. I'm just saying there's got to be... Nobody's perfect.
He probably does weird shit,
No
though.
One's perfect.
He thinks about, like... He, like, thinks about the Pope's asshole while he's
yeah.
he jerks off into the mud.
That yeah, he jacks it to tub. Kale.
But
with a K.
The thing about it is, it's not whether or not the guy who builds the weird mud hut isn't a freak. You know he's a freak. He's got to be a weirdo. He's some weirdo, you know.
Yeah.
But when you look at whatever your particular life circumstances is happening, and you ask yourself, "Am I harmonizing with this? Can I harmonize with this?
Or am I soloist?"
What would the harmony look like? And you can never be, unfortunately, you can never be a soloist because you always have this external phenomena happening around you. Always, there's no way out of it, man. You're in a band
mm-hmm.
and you've got to decide what kind of music you're going to play.
Right.
So it's like you can look at what's happening at any given second and think to yourself, if I were a perfect musician, how would I harmonize with this thing that's going on around me right now? How would I harmonize in a way that it would be the most beautiful thing? How could I? And when you start just playing around with that, when you're in the depths, that's where it's fun. It's like, and when things are great, it's easy to harmonize.
Yeah.
When things are going good, it's like, whatever, get your friend a fucking hot dog and a beer. Bang, you've like, that's the symphony, you know? You're at a barbecue. But when you're in the dark, when you're sitting across from your... you know, from your friend who's like crying because his girlfriend left him, or when you're dealing with your own tragedy, and you ask, "Is there a way to fucking harmonize with this right now? Can I turn this into a symphony?"
Yes,
that's your best intention, and that's where those are the people we love to watch. Those are the people we love to watch in movies. We love to watch Tom Cruise in Mission Impossible. Perfectly doing this well choreographed dance with chaos to transform it into his own. We love that.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen it, but yeah, we love it.
Mission Impossible, any action movie.
No, I get it.
Always involves a hero doing this kind of incredible choreographed dance with chaos.
We want to see people win. And I think that's the thing that we forget about when we are depressed and we're dealing with shit is that. What is the thing that, from the beginning of time that we've all related to is like, people are like, this is so much like that generation, or this is so much like that time. But we've all just wanted people to win. You want people to win.
Yeah.
And that's got to be inside of all of us. It's not about heaven or hell. It's about achieving something that's in your soul that you want, you know? You know, that, and it's all possible. It really is. That, you know, to two people, you and I, like, we are thankful for where we are, but we also know what it's like to not have anything.
That's right.
And that it's okay. Just because you don't have anything doesn't mean that you aren't anything.
Oh, no. I mean, that's right. I mean, that's the thing. You know, the problem with, like, you're on TV. You have this show that's become
you wanted to a say TV name. Star, but
you practically are. You are. You got this like hit. You have a show that everyone knows about that you created, and so it's like, you know, people. It would be very easy for someone to be like, oh, listen to this guy. He's got some fucking TV show. Yeah. Everything going great for that guy, but they don't understand.
I'm not related to anybody. I came out here with nobody.
What was that club we used to perform at?
Martini Lounge. Largemont and Melrose.
They don't understand the Martini Lounge.
No. They don't. Was some sad shit. Yeah.
This was a shitty club.
I was 20 in 1999 or 2000 when I met sweet little Duncan.
We were so poor.
And but you were established more... I was, like, just some guy that came out here. I was doing some bit with, like, a fucking recorder on stage. Yes, you were. I mean, I had heard your name before.
I was just a comedian that was, like, doing weird shit, but I certainly wasn't established.
I was a guy just trying to get suck the open mic guy's dick, you know, to get me on stage.
Well, that's what we'd all do.
Yeah, okay. All right. Well, then I guess I'm not alone.
But we were... The thing is, like, the problem with whatever success that we have is that when you get to a certain level of success, it seems like it makes you suddenly like not allowed to talk about certain things or be like, yeah, yeah, yeah. Look at you, Mr. Blah, blah, blah. And it's like, no, you don't understand. Like I was starving. We were both like starving. And because like, I don't know why, but because of a series, you know,
but I really feel, and I talked about this the other day with someone, where they were talking about someone who got successful, like, right off the bat. And I'm so thankful that I wasn't.
Right.
Because if you don't know what bad feels like, how are you going to know what good feels like? If you get everything you want, then there's nothing else. So... I specifically remember those days of like, and not like in a sad way, like in a like, I'm going to do this way, but at lunch I would have a 69-cent thing of green peas and put it on a thing of bread and have a green bean sandwich. And it was a fucking great sandwich. And there wasn't anything in my brain or my heart that was like, this is sad. It was like, no, this is what I got to do. So when you want to do something, you do it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I always feel when people are like, I don't know if I'm supposed to do this. Oh, well, then you're not. Because your heart and your soul knows, fuck, this thing keeps getting like crushed down. And if it's something you care about, you go, no, it's not going to get crushed down because I care about it so much that I will not allow it to. I'm going to pick it up and I'm going to achieve the thing that I want to do. And if I don't, then I'm going to die trying to achieve the thing that I want to give to the world.
Yeah.
That if it's in your, if there's anything in your heart that makes you go like, I feel like I should shut the fuck up. You know what you should do. And when I said shut the fuck up, I didn't mean that in an aggressive way.
No, I
meant that in a like very sincere way of I've been there where I felt like I needed to do stuff. You know when you're supposed to do stuff and you do it.
It's funny you mentioned the death thing though, because I remember when I was starving, I remember thinking again and again, you just have to make this decision. And it's a really weird fatalism. But I remember thinking, I'll just die for this. Mm-hmm. Well, I would just die for it. Like, I remember thinking, like, I guess I'll just starve to death or something awful will happen to me or I'll get addicted to drugs and, like, kill myself or something. But you're so in love with the thing that you do make a weird switch flips in your head. We're like, well, I'll just die for this.
Yeah.
It will either work or I'll die.
Right.
And that's a fun place to get to.
Yeah.
Because you've just – that you're all in. All the chips are on the table and you've made this decision. Like, yep, I'm just going to do this. It's an incarnation. If it doesn't work out, well, I'll be incinerated. But it works out if you make that decision.
It does, because you go like, this is how important this is. If I don't do this, then I'm dead.
You know what we call it?
Huh?
In my community?
Which?
Oh, we call it jihad. The holy...
Jack plays. I'll get my ISIS tea to go.
No, the term jihad is such a beautiful word. Like, people don't realize how beautiful the term jihad is.
The term, yeah.
The term jihad is beautiful because it's holy war. And when you make the decision in your life that I am going to die or succeed in this quest for my life, then you have entered into a jihad. You are now fighting a holy war. And I can't think of anything more beautiful than that. That is the dream job. That makes whatever your job happens to be, because, you know, we have our human jobs, which is whatever you're doing in the day to make money to fund your war.
Mm-hmm.
But the war is your job. The war is your...
There's always a war.
That's, yeah. The war is your... the struggle...
And war can't be negative.
It doesn't have to be.
It's fighting for what you believe in. Because no one... You're not going to deal with people that... You're going to be surrounded by all believe in what you believe in. You need to be fighting for something that you believe in. And maybe you have some supporters, but more than likely, if it's something important, you're going to be fighting against people that don't think it's important.
Not to give you a history lesson here, but can you name some people in history who off the cuff you can name fought that kind of war, people who nobody believed in, who ended up...
I mean,
who are the people that come to mind?
The coming to mind right now is the girl Claudette Colvin. We did a story about. It was 14 years old in Montgomery, Alabama, a black girl who was she was pregnant out of wedlock, and she did what Rosa Parks did a year before Rosa Parks, and she inspired.
What did she do?
She refused to move to the black part of the bus.
While she was pregnant?
Yeah. But the reason why I brought up pregnancy is the NAACP said, we don't think Claudette is a good role model.
Oh, wow.
Because she's dark-skinned and she's pregnant and 15 out of wedlock. Let's put someone who's already in with the NAACP and... more likable.
Wow.
And lighter skin. And I mean, I hate to say it. They made a very smart choice, but I just love her because we all know that feeling of feeling like, no, you can't do that. And then this person at 15 years old to stand up and say, fuck you. No, I'm going to do that. I'm going to stand up for myself. The woman's still alive. I really hope someday to meet her. She lives in Queens, New York. But I also need to take something back is that I can't say we all know, because I know that I've never been black and I'll never know what it feels like to be black, and I can never relate to that. So forgive me for saying that. I just think it's a story that makes me go, why don't we know about her? Let's not forget Rosa Parks. God bless Rosa Parks, but let's remember where it came from.
But this is I think this is like one of the problems is that everybody thinks that people knowing about you is the big reward. And that something that always sticks with me. It's so weird to bring this up with you, but like, I remember reading this, somebody had given me this fucking grimoire. I gave it away because it gave me the creeps, but it was this book of like magic spells and stuff. And like, it was like this antique book. And in the very beginning, there was this very well-written academic preface about, I wish I hadn't given the book away now. I'm such a pussy, but I wish I kept it. But like, there's this very well-written academic preface about, you know, magic is the remnants of a technology that existed prior to the Great Flood. We still don't really understand what it is.
Right.
Adherence to this ancient religion, the ones that we know, the well-known magicians, are not the great magicians, because the great magicians are the ones who stood so close to the Godhead that their identity merged with it, and they did not. No one will never ever know who they were. And I always thought, whoa, that's so trippy, man. The truly famous, the true celebrities, the true stars are the ones who get so close to the fire that they don't, there's no self anymore. They just merge into that, whatever you want to call it, the force that heals your, when you get cut, the same, it's the same force that heals that cut. But they get so close to it that they're like, oh, I'm just going to be that thing. There's no, you know, guaranteed when you have a cold, there's a particular white blood cell that's probably more heroic than the other white blood cells and is more effective than the other white blood cells in fighting off this cold that minus white blood cells would have killed you. No one will ever know who that white blood cell was. If a human, if you're walking and a human jumps and knocks you off of train tracks prior to you getting hit by a train, for the rest of your life, you'll think of this human. Oh, yeah. Tom Carson, my savior. But so many other things are operating in the universe completely.
How about the conductor that slowed down a little bit?
Exactly right. Yeah.
No one's going to think about the conductor.
No one.
They're going to think about the guy that pushed you off the fucking track.
That's the guy who gets the credit.
But what we really need to think about is what pulled that man on that track.
Why he got there.
Why he got there.
Probably because he was texting.
Yeah, probably. Or he was listening to Train and thought it was ironic.
But you know what I mean?
I do.
The fucking anonymous ones. Those are the enlightened. Like, all of us, maybe not you, but all of me and, like, my ilk, comedians, performers, you're a comedian, you're a performer.
Like to be I'm just part saying, of
maybe
group.
Not, you are part of the group. I was saying, maybe not you, just because I didn't want to, like, say you.
No,
just,
I'm
like,
with you. I'm with you.
We like to be in the limelight. We like the attention. You like it. We like it.
Well, that's why we do it.
Yeah, we enjoy it. We
it's
get off
on it. It's not like, oh, all this light is all of a sudden on us. No, we've searched this light.
We love it.
And we have a reason to go to that light.
Right.
Is because we have something to say that we feel more people should know.
Right. So for us, that's where we're at. That's the level we're at. But this is where I love, this is what I love to think about. It's like, okay, I know I've been around some of the most charismatic, brilliant people that, as far as I'm aware, probably exist on planet Earth. I've met, like, being a comedian, you meet
a lot of people.
Lot of people, and you meet very talented, super genius, you know, linguistic, like, people who are geniuses, people who are just verbal geniuses.
Yeah.
Or people who have this incredible magnetism that is, like, irresistible and, like, magical. You run into these people. You do, too. You've worked with some of the most famous people alive in drunk history. Will Ferrell. I mean, you name it. You can go down the list. You've been around them. You know that there are people who have this kind of mojo that is undeniable. But if that is true, the question to ask is that the top of the... Is that the end of the spectrum of talent?
No, it's not.
No. It goes way past that.
It goes way past that.
Who are those people?
It's the people that will say, because, and it's not a religious tangent that I want to go on, but no one is born without reason. I really believe that. I don't care, famous or unfamous, there's no reason for someone to be born without having purpose. That everyone does have purpose. And that is something that I feel like is so fucked with.
You mean like destiny?
That there's... Yeah, that a famous person has no fucking right to be more important than anyone else. But the light that we give them makes it seem like that. Now, I will say one thing. It's like, hey, I'm going to tell you, a dude in Ohio who's really smart, there's a thing called charisma. Some people have it, some people don't. Where you look at a movie star and you're like, they're charismatic. And you gravitate towards people that have this likability or charismatic as quality. But to the kid in Ohio, like, it doesn't mean you don't, you have a voice. Like,
yeah.
And I feel like all these, and not to get political, but all this bad shit that's happening right now.
Like, specifically what?
Shootings, people right. with guns, blowing up people, live, you know, the news guy, and like, I feel like it's something that we are given as children that we want attention.
Right.
And it's just to figure out how do you want to be remembered. Because I do believe that everyone is created equally.
Those guys are like lazy artists.
No, they're just giving up. They're gremlins. They like, they saw the bright light. They drank the water, whatever you want to say after midnight. They did, and they are evil. People that want to destroy people are evil.
I disagree.
The guy that killed the woman.
I don't think he's evil.
Please continue then, before I continue.
Well, because, no, because I don't think, the thing is this. If he was evil, right? If we can make this guy evil, like a man, like a...
I'm not a judge, by the way, so I'm not trying to say.
Let's make him a mantis. Let's make him a mantis. You make him like the alien or something, right? You make him like...
No, I just say, this thing happened. Let's not even categorize him as, like, human.
I don't think he's evil.
But tell me why.
Well, because, like, if you, like, think of your most, think Can of your worst day.
Sure. Today.
Stop. Think of your worst day.
Yeah.
Now magnify that day times a million.
Yeah.
Now imagine 100 of those days in a row.
Right.
And that's what those people are living in. So I don't think that those people are evil. I think that they just have, like, I don't know, because I can't go into that guy's mind.
You're not them, and I'm not them either. But here's the thing that I believe, or I feel is evil, is when you know what you're doing, and it's calculated in a way of, like, hey, I was mistreated, and I don't know any experience I've ever had where I was treated the way I wish I was, or anyone really, that everyone gets treated in a way they don't like. Anyway, point being is this guy that killed this woman and cameraman knew exactly what he was doing. And what I believe is evil is taking advantage of the things that you were taught and the things that you learn and abusing them for a thing that you want people to know about.
Tell me the story of the dog.
You ready?
Yeah. Do you mind? Because it completely relates to this. I want you to tell me the story of the dog.
I mean,
dog.
It's going
to
make me cry. But the sweet girl I'm close with, she told me this. And she's 15 years old. And... I know that sounds crazy, but I did a documentary with her. And she told me that when she was 15, or actually when she was 12, that she had a dog. And one day, her dog started biting a chair that her father was given from his father, because her father had that as a child. And the dog was gnawing on it. and her father pulled out his gun and shot the dog in the head, and the dog went running out of the house. And 3 months after that, they were eating dinner and they heard this noise on the front of the door, just kind of like just some sort of noise towards the door. And she told me, like, I thought it was a ghost. And her father opened the door, and it was the dog. And the dog licked her father's boots. And she says to me, "That's why I love animals. It's because they always forgive."
Yeah. That. See that? That story, man. That to me is the essence of Christianity. That is the most Christian.
Just life. I'm a Christian, but I just want to praise all of religion, of like all of people, is that some shitty things happen to us. But if the more we live in the shitty things that happen to us, the more shitty things will happen. Take a test. Spend 10 days depressed and living in your place thinking nothing's going to happen. Then take 10 days after that and just go outside and see what happens.
Right.
Does that mean those 10 days when you go outside, amazing things are going to happen? Materialistically, probably no. But interiorly, your brain just starts working. We have this God-given gift of our mind that constantly is thinking of new things to try to make you better and try to make you who you actually were born to be. And I just feel like fucking reality and our generations that we're surrounded by make us question that. And there's just our brains have never changed.
But if you think about the decision, even though I'm applying decision making to an animal, who knows?
Oh, sorry.
That the dog is made to lick this man's boot that shot in the head. And then you think of the Christ being crucified.
Mm-hmm.
And that great thing that Christ said, which is, "Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing." Oh, that's it. That is, to me, that sums it all up. Because if someone's being a dick to me at any given moment of the day, and I think, this fucking asshole is trying to hurt me, then what is that going to do to me? That's going to make me very defensive and antagonistic, and it's going to make me want to hurt them back. But if some dick is doing some weird shit to me, and I think, I don't think you know what you're doing. I don't think you're aware of what you're doing at all. Like, I think you're completely lost. Then suddenly I'm not going to interact with them from the perspective of like someone trying to hit back, but I'm going to be kinder to them.
Yeah.
You know, and I think when that dog is licking that guy's boot, that's the visual representation of the saying, "Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing." That dog is saying, "I forgive you, I forgive you, I forgive you. I know you didn't mean it. I know you didn't mean it. I know you didn't mean it. I know you didn't mean it." And that to me is the hashtag love wins. Love wins is not some dummy getting dragged into jail. Love wins looks like that.
Yeah.
The dog licking the boot.
Yeah.
Love wins. That's what love looks like, right?
Right.
Love doesn't look like a conquering boot crushing down the evil person into the mud of their own tragic life. Love looks like the helpless, pathetic animal licking the boot of the thing that shot it in the fucking head. That's what love looks like. And that's not very palatable to a lot of people because you don't win. There's no winning there. I'm sure that guy probably within a few days was kicking the fucking dog again. I don't know. That you don't win. Love doesn't win. The hashtag should be love doesn't win. It doesn't. It definitively does not win.
But you got to keep loving.
Yes.
It's like the team that you love so much that just can't win, but they're still fueling on love. And the day we stop fighting for love is the day we're done. I mean, love is all we need. It's my buddy Johnny. He used to sing a song about it before he got shot.
It's true, though. But that's the jihad. See, the jihad, and that's where it gets confusing. Because our understanding of wars are meant to win. No. Wars are meant to conquer. But
war,
it's...
To me, it's about understanding. You fight to figure out. I'm not pro-war of, like, U.S. to Iraq or U.S. to anywhere. But the war as in... I remember, you know, my parents have been married for 45 years, and they never argued. So when I, like, first started dating as a kid, like...
Never argued once.
Anytime I would fight, it'd be like, all right, I'm done with you.
And but I wait, do, they never argued? That is nuts, man.
That like I you, was around for it. I mean, now I know differently, but the point I'm trying to get at is that I always felt like, oh, if you argue, then it's just not working. And then I got older and I realized, no, there's some things that you argue about because you feel passionate about something.
Right.
And that's not negative. It's okay to argue. It's okay to fight. As long as a fight is a negative word, but, you know, you have to stand up for what you believe in. And sometimes when you stand up for yourself, you might actually realize something differently than what you believe in. Like, to be open-minded about what someone else is saying that they're fighting for. You know, that none of us fucking know anything. That's
right.
My bottom line.
Right.
And the Duncan Trussell passion that I have is that if we knew everything, we'd be dead. I really do believe that. That there'd be no purpose for our hearts to beat if we knew everything. And heaven or hell, believe it or not, there is a thing in this life, in my mind, is we learn. And that's the thing, is like every single day, whether we feel like we've done better one day and less the other, there's some sort of learning, and it's up to us to go, okay, that happened that way, so I'm going to learn to know that if I do that, that will happen, and that we just want to be better and to give better. I don't know.
That's so cool. But that's the thing. I don't think a lot of people do that. Like, I don't think there's a lot of people who each day – when the sun is setting, spend any amount of time thinking, did I learn anything at all?
And I think that's a good thing to write down. What did I learn today? I mean, that's what when we're at dinner with our family, when we're in fifth grade, how's school? What did you learn?
Right. Right. That's a question.
Why only when we're 10?
Right.
Being asked that question.
That's so weird.
Just remember to think that we're still in school. We're just not graded.
That is so odd. Why did that stop?
It hasn't. It's just something that we need to do, you know, that every day we are in school, where we are given the same exact shit that our teachers gave us, and now we're actually not sitting at desks. We're choosing the things that we hear about, and we're asking, well, did I learn that? Okay, let's say, like, oh, my dumbass friend told me that fucking Ozzy Osbourne sucks and Fallout Boy is great. I learned that my friend has a shitty opinion on music. You know, even that small thing is teaching your brain to say, I know who I am.
Right. Otherwise, because it's like, what if you don't... It's a great metric, man. It's a great watermark in your life. Because otherwise, you just have this kind of amorphous, structureless amoeba-like existence that isn't really marked by any growth at all if you don't start measuring what is it that I'm figuring out here in this dimension.
And my favorite thing is, and I still keep a diary, my favorite thing is anytime I get really depressed or really like down about the current situation I'm in, I go back to that diary a year, 5 years before, and I go, wow, look at the thing that I was really concerned about. And knowing now, that means nothing.
Nothing.
And there's something that you and I both care about right now that in years to come
seem like nothing.
Will be nothing.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean they're nothing right now. It's important right now for us to hone in on that because it's important to us. Because
there's relief, but
it's mold. We're fucking clay. We're clay. We're clay with brains. We're not just fucking clay. We're clay with brains. And it's just us to figure out how we're going to be molded. Derek. And sometimes we can't figure it out. We just have to accept what we're molded as.
What'd you learn today?
I'm so jealous of Duncan's new house.
Thank you.
I love this place, man.
Thanks, man.
I swam in a pool, which I'm a huge fan of swimming. And I learned the Ravens have a long year ahead. They didn't win today. I learned...
what does that mean?
The Baltimore Ravens. We lost today.
Why does that make it a long year?
They just need to figure some stuff out. They didn't play that great, but...
I got to get into football, man.
I don't know, man.
I feel like I'm missing out on some really great connections with some of my dearest friends because everyone I know is into football, and I end up having nothing to talk about, and I think it's rude at this point that I'm not studying football. Now it's me being rude.
It's a fun thing, man. I think if you have a team, it makes it really fun.
Do I have to have cable?
No. You can just come to my place. We'll watch it. I have the NFL package. Let me just say this thing. I remember recently I was talking to someone, and we were at this party. This isn't bragging because I have a good thing to say about it. But we were at Petco Park where the Padres play. And there was like this party there. And I said, you realize these seats right in front of us, what is so cool about them is that they are filled every day when these Padres play from black guy, a white girl, a black Republican, a white Democrat, and none of that means shit because of what's in front of them. That they're all living in this one moment. Cool. And to me, that's why I feel like church has always been important, is because who doesn't want to be part of a community?
Right.
And that is why I feel like concerts are so good to go to. That, oh my God. As shitty as it is when you hear a live album on a CD and everyone's singing the song, remember that that one little girl that wanted to kill herself heard everyone around her singing the same thing that was in her soul.
Yeah.
And feels a part of something. Harmony. It's harmony. And it's not harmony, Corinne. It's actually harmony. Sorry, I had
that's
to be
so
a joke.
Cool, because
you know
football
what I mean?
Gives it's football gives people of
you feel so, like you're all one.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean that that's we cool. are. But you feel that. They all fight for this one thing. They all believe in, oh, I hate that, this type of person. But for this moment, in this sport, they're all together. And
that's
I,
so cool.
That's the thing that it makes me not like get all like anti, like, oh, fuck you, frat house motherfuckers. Like, it's there are really positive things that come with football and sports.
Jesus Christ, man. If my dad had described football to me the way you just described it when I was growing up, I'd be completely into football right now. That's all I would have had to hear. It's like, no, this is just a drum beat. It's like giving people something to dance to in a certain way. It's beautiful in that way.
Yeah. I wish I was your father.
Well, next incarnation.
Next
Let's time. Hope.
Next step.
Drunk History, when does my drunk history come out?
I don't know. It's going to be, I think, the third or fourth last episode. So probably the end of October.
So this is airing on Comedy Central. What day?
Tuesdays at 10:30.
Tuesdays at 10:30. Everyone, please watch Drunk History. I got to see a cut of mine.
Wait till you see this, you guys. Duncan is going to talk about something I'm not going to give away, but it starts with Ed and ends with a sin.
It's such a wonderful thing to hang out with you, man. I hope we get to hang out more and not record it in a podcast.
It was great. My publicist said I would like you.
Where are you on Twitter?
I don't know. Derek Waters with two S's.
All links will be at DuncanTrussell.com. Thanks for joining us, Derek.
I love you and all your fans.
Love you too. Thanks for listening, everybody. And thanks for Harry's.com for sponsoring this episode. Go to Harry's.com and use offer code FAMILYHOUR to get $5 off your first order. And definitely DVR, for whatever way you do it, watch this season's Drunk History, won't you? And if you have a dog or a cat or an animal, will you give them a little treat for me? I'd really appreciate it. You guys have a great week. I'll talk to you soon. Hare Krishna. Now enjoy this track from Bass Nectar's album Vavavoom. It's called Laughter Crescendo.
Thank you. once more, you've covered nothing.